And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, folks? I'm losing track of episodes. Is this 49?
This is 49, yeah.
49, yes. Almost close to 50. Well, welcome to another episode of the Fanboy Garage, folks. Couple of things to talk about today, huh, Chris?
There are. So, Batman... We finally have official word that Robert Pattinson is in fact going to be the next Batman and Bruce Wayne. So we had spoken about this, I guess, a couple episodes ago when it was still just a rumor, but it looked like it was probably going to happen. And now it's going to happen. So Robert Pattinson, a man that I have become oddly familiar with, as we've mentioned before, is your new Batman and Bruce Wayne is clearly taking the character in a very different direction from where it's been to this point, right? In this new age of DC movies.
Right.
And I'm kind of excited about it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm always going to get excited about a new Batman movie, right? Because it's my favorite character of all time. And, you know, these types of casting things are always exciting. And you want to start to speculate on, well, what's the character going to be like? And... you know, what's the suit going to be like and whatever. And I mean, yeah, it looks like it's going to be, you know, an early 30s or 30-year-old-ish Batman, Bruce Wayne, who's not quite, it's not going to be an origin story, but it's also going to be, you know, he's still going to be finding his way, right? But it's a Batman that exists already.
Right.
For a little while anyway. And yeah. So
yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this. I don't know if it was the episode with Pattinson or maybe it was through our conversations with Rick, but I do remember us talking about, yeah, this is definitely going to be a Batman who's kind of been, you know, it's not the year one Batman. It's right. The year three or four kind of Batman, right? So that's intriguing. And I'm glad we're not going to get any of that origin stuff. I mean, because up until this point, you know, even in Zack Snyder's rendition or interpretation of the Caped Crusader, we do have some flashbacks to, you know, the infamous, you know, Thomas and Martha Wayne death in the alleyway and all that stuff. So I'm glad. I hope we don't retread any of that. It's just... kick it off like the way that they do Spider-Man Homecoming, because we're all familiar with who this person is and their motivations. Let's just get this thing started. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say, I remember initially when, you know, rumors were swirling about Pattinson, you know, being up for the role. There was a lot of hate, a lot of backlash, all this other craziness. That seems to have quickly died down.
Yeah,
at least in my opinion, right? So
yeah.
Seems like fans are being more accepting of him stepping into the role, which is great. People are just more excited about the fact that finally they know who Batman's going to be. So
yeah, I think that's the thing, right? So, you know, we're in this age now where stuff leaks out, and we've already been talking about Robert Pattinson as Batman for a couple of weeks now. And so at this point, I think you hit it right on the head, like, people are just like, okay, finally we can start to talk about Batman again and talk about it now in legit terms. It's not a rumor anymore. It's not speculation. It's happening. So let's take it for what it is and let's start, you know, trying to pick out the positives of all of this. And I think there are many. Aside from the fact that I'm a big Matt Reeves fan, you know, love what he did with the last two Apes movies. I think they're fantastic. And I like the direction that it seems like they're going in anyway. I want to see a younger Batman. I want to see a Batman still finding his way. I want to see a detective Batman, you know, and I want to see it be a little noir. And you know, we speculated on the villains a couple of weeks ago, you know, the Penguin and the Catwoman, supposedly. Penguin and Catwoman, rather, are supposed to be in this.
Yeah, but there's like no mention of any of that.
No, well, nor will there be. I mean, because these are the official announcements now you're getting, right? So you're not going to get anything until there's casting, I would assume, for those roles. And who knows? It's all speculation, right? So to this point, So far, the only thing we know is that it's coming out next. It's going to start production next year, and that Robert Pattinson is in the lead. That's all we know. And Matt Reeves is directing it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because the we just quickly mentioned this before we got on the air here, but you know, the Hollywood Reporter, Boris Kitt, did a little an interesting roundup story about how quick, quote unquote, this whole process has taken. Which, for those of us who've been following this for a while now, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's been that quick. It may be that, you know, folks that thought that they were in the know and have their sources may have been thrown off track with, you know, the dangling of certain names and things of that nature. So it was really, interesting to read that story and to hear, you know, how quickly this process kind of happened for Pattinson. And you know, when you involve Nicholas Hoult and all that, essentially the two of them both flew out at around the same time and did a screen test in a bat suit. But at some point, you know, Reeves, I think this is up until early April, you know, he had been eyeing Pattinson given his body of work and thought he'd be great for the role and all of that. So it's a it's kind of fascinating to kind of get a little bit of that. I don't know how true it is, all of it.
Right.
Because we do know a lot of this stuff kind of does take a while. But, you know, the inside baseball is always a fascinating thing to kind of sink your teeth into.
Yeah, it is. And I actually think Nicholas Hoult would have been good as well.
As Batman?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a younger Batman, you know, younger Bruce Wayne.
He's kind of, to me, you know, when his name got thrown out there, I was like, oh, no. He, you know, Pattinson has kind of a chiseled look.
He does, yes, definitely. And, no, Pattinson, and, of the two, Pattinson would have been my choice.
Yeah, Hulk kind of still has that baby
smoothness.
You know, like, I don't know if he can actually grow a beard yet.
Okay.
I know that sounds weird, but he's got weird. This, you know, kind of smoothish, you know, face. Now that being said, we all know that oftentimes, at least in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, sometimes the person that is screen testing for one character, the hero, often becomes the villain.
Yes.
So could Nicholas Hoult be up for a villain role?
Sure. Why not? I mean, if he's up for it, I mean, if he's willing to do it, I was thinking the same thing, actually. I'm like, you know, if they were both neck and neck like that and it was close and, you know, you like the actor, you know, is he going to land something else? You know, it's a different role in this. Was it just, no, I'm either Batman or I'm not. I'm done.
Right.
You know, who knows?
I mean, look at Tom, like, you know, as I was referencing the MCU, Tom Hiddleston.
Right.
Screen tested for Thor.
Yeah.
And then became an amazing villain.
Yeah. And yeah, clearly he was a much better match for Loki. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you need to go through that process. I mean, that's why you go through this process. And that's why you see so many names thrown out. You know, when we start to speculate and people start to hear things, and it's because, you know, they're screen testing or they're auditioning a lot of people. Just they want to get talent in the room, right? And that doesn't always mean that, you know, the talent may land the role that they might actually be auditioning for. But it doesn't mean that the director isn't taking notice.
Right.
You know, because there's a reason why they wanted these actors there. And oftentimes when casting for like a lead role like that, you do wind up filling out your cast, you know, with some of the people who didn't make it. Doesn't mean they're not talented actors, right? But it just they weren't right for that specific role that you were looking for. Or maybe somebody else came in and just blew you away.
Right. So, I think the same thing. If I remember correctly, maybe Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
That's also thing. Tested for role. Screen tested for Batman, for the role of Batman.
Yep.
Bruce Wayne. Yeah. So, and great Jonathan Crane, in my opinion.
Sure.
Great villain. Yeah.
Well, again, as another guy who's really talented, and you know, you get him in there, and you're like, wow, this guy's great. He's not exactly what we're looking for this role, but we could figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, now that that's all said and done, you know, I guess the next thing is, I mean, everyone's kind of spinning out of control now with, like, you know, to your point, what is the suit going to look like?
Sure. Well, this is the fun stuff now.
Their inspiration from.
Why not?
You know, the villains. So inspiration wise, I mean, what do you think? You think we're going to get like kind of new 52 or Rebirth, kind of very more slimming, lean looking Batman?
Well, that
suit?
I do think. Yes, I do think that. I don't know the specifics on, like, I would think, based on the timeline or what we think the timeline will be, as far as, you know, it's a younger Batman, younger Bruce Wayne, I would think the suit should be a little less evolved.
Mm.
A little bit more simplistic. That would be my hope.
Okay.
You know, but who knows? I mean, you never know what, maybe they're going to do something that we've never seen before. I mean, it's, you know, will DC have a say as far as, like, will they want some synergy, you know, with their current books, maybe? You never know. I mean, there's a lot of different factors, I think, that go into this, but I would prefer it be a less, sort of, less evolved, more simplistic suit, slimmer. Yeah, especially if they're going with, like, the more detective kind of angle, right? You don't necessarily need some tactical suit to be in a detective story. It would look a little weird. So yeah, I would hope that it's a little bit more simplistic.
Do you think we're going like all black, or do you think we're going with like grayish?
I have no idea. I would hope it's, there's some grayish. See, I like the color scheme that they had in the Snyder films, where you actually got the gray, like the gray was gray, you know?
And black.
Now it may be a little bit more pronounced bat symbol, but yeah, I would love to keep that color scheme. That's my preferred scheme, that the gray with the black cowl and cape and and the black logo, emblem, whatever. That's my preference. I just think it films well. I think it works with the way they're going with it. But who knows? I mean, all black again. I mean, I love the Batman 89 suit. It might be my favorite of the cinematic bat suits. I mean, the one in that Affleck wore was great, just because it looked like a comic book. It looked like, you know, like a Frank Miller Batman. But
oh, totally.
I love the, I just still have a soft spot for that Batman 89 suit for whatever reason. It looks cool. But I don't know that I'd want to see that again in this type of film. It fit what Tim Burton was going for. It fit his Gotham City, his art and style and everything, and the way the movie was shot. But I would lean towards the gray with the black, you know, like the Snyder one, but just a sleeker version, a more streamlined version.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, just thinking about Robert Pattinson's build, you know, I can't help but my mind automatically takes me to the Dark Knight type suit.
Well, that's not going to work, obviously.
No. But I mean, like that, because it was a rather lean looking suit. because Bale had lost, you know, again.
Oh, you're talking about, I'm sorry, you're talking about the movie, The Dark Knight.
Yeah, that's
I'm thinking Dark Knight Returns. Okay.
Yeah. You know, Bale had lost some weight.
Yep.
After Begins, and so he was kind of like this leaner looking Batman. So I imagine that type of suit, not with all the tactical plating stuff that they had going on. I mean, I like that suit. You know, my favorite suit of all time is the Begin suit.
Really?
Like, oh yeah. I don't know what it is about it. It's probably like that muted rubber look.
Yeah.
That I dig, and I like the shape of the emblem on the chest.
Right.
And I do like the neck, the cowl part of the neck.
Neck
part of the cowl. I kind of dig that a little bit.
Well, I like the fact that it for the, you know, fitting the theme of that movie, like it was sort of unrefined.
Yeah.
In its own way, because it was supposed to be, right? So it's his first suit, and he's
figuring things
out. Yeah,
and he's got like bits
and
pieces of it. Yeah,
so he's
doing different things.
Yeah, so for it fit the movie. While I love the Nolan films, I have never loved any of those suits, only because and I get what he was going for. He was trying to ground it, right? So he needed to, they needed to be logical. They couldn't just be comic
Spelunky.
Book realistic. Yeah, they needed to have a there had to be a reason for why that suit existed, right? So it was all like kind of technical, and there was, you know, it was based on, you know, R&D and stuff from Wayne.
Right.
I get it. It fits that movie. It fits that series of films perfectly. But if I'm kind of dream costuming in my head, like, I would like it to be something a little bit more comic realistic. That's what I loved about the Snyder bat suit, the Batflex suit. It's that right. it was comic. It was like ripped right out of the pages of a comic, but at the same time, like, it looked great on film, and yeah. And it seemed like a real suit, like somebody would actually wear. So it really, that was a home run, because it accomplished a lot.
Yeah.
You know, whereas even the Batman 89 suit, like, as great as that looks to me in that movie, like, it you know, that's not a, there's not a lot of realism in that suit, right?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, so I don't know. I like the sleek idea, but I would be a little disappointed if this suit winds up being reminiscent of the Nolan direction anyway. The suit. I would like it to be a little bit. I think we've gotten to the point now, especially, like, one thing DC or Warner Brothers, whatever, they've nailed with this is their suits, right? Lately, like, I mean, that Aquaman suit, that the actual, like, the orange and green one, like the comic book version, that looked great. You know, like, and you know, Wonder Woman looked good once they put the color back in and into her suit and stuff, and so they've done a really good job of this stuff, and I'd like, because they've kept it comic realistic as much as you can anyway lately, so I'd like to see them continue in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, looking at some of the suits, I mean, it looks like the new 52 version of the suit leans a little bit more on the grayish side of things, yeah. Right?
I love that suit, by the
way. Which one? The new 52?
Love it.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it looked like it had some of that plating.
Yeah, well, it
stuff,
was more
stuff going on, right?
Yeah, well, not really plating. It was, I think they wanted it to look, I'll say stitched, for lack of a better term. Like, it had, like, I can't really explain it, but it was very much a, it actually, you know, funny thing is, Affleck's suit that he wears in the Snyder films was sort of a hybrid of the Dark Knight Return, the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns, and the new 52 suit, to me. Because it didn't, you know, that's because it had some of those, like, seams or whatever. I don't even know if I'm not using the right word for what it was. But, like,
I know what you're saying.
You know,
yeah,
what,
like,
I'm
and the shoulders and stuff
just
like
in
that.
Down the legs and down the chested parts. Yeah, it's just, yeah, I love the new 52 suit. So I would like to go in that direction if they could.
Right. And now, then the Rebirth suit is.
I'm not a big fan of that.
That
awkward
again,
yellow around
mostly gray. The emblem's got a yellow trim on
it.
Yeah,
that's the big change.
Yeah. And he's got some yellow highlights maybe on his belt.
Right.
Cowl, and, you know, the cowl is the cowl, right? It doesn't...
Yeah, that you can... I mean, the only difference sometimes you'll get...
He's got shorter ears.
Yeah, you'll get longer ears, shorter ears. That's another thing that people debate. It's a matter of preference.
Right. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm sure, they'll kind of strike a balance. And I'm, to your point before, I think they'll be bringing a lot of those comic book elements into, you know, how they style the suit, because Aquaman and even Shazam.
And she's right. Shazam too. Yep.
You know, for all of my gripes on how the suit was built and molded on Zachary Levi's body, it was, for all intents and purposes, a very comic booky type suit.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep. It was not trying to be
tactical.
I mean, it was like, hey, this is a superhero. This is a comic book thing, and it was proud of it.
Literally a dude in tights.
Yes. Or, right, modern version.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. Now, if, say, we don't get the rumored, Penguin and Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
What other villain?
I mean, there's, look, Batman has the best rogues gallery, right?
Yeah.
So you can get deep with villains and still it would be cool. I mean, I would prefer, so I mean, I've said this a lot here on the show. I said it in the Rick episode, said it, I think, even again a couple weeks ago when we speculated on it. Like, I have no problem with opening the world up to where, like, you know,
they're all kind of around.
Yeah, like you read the book like The Long Halloween, right, or things like that, where like there's all these villains that are kind of, or soon to be villains, right, that just exist in that universe, and some play a bigger role at certain points and some don't. And then, you know, like, it's, like, that's how I would, that would be cool if you did that. Like, even if you just had like sort of little Easter eggy type things where like, oh, this is going to be this person and this is going to be that person. And I think that would be, that's what I would like to see. And I don't know who the main villain ultimately, if there is even going to be one, is going to be, but it would be nice if they just kind of populated, especially if it is going to be a trilogy, if they just populated that whole world. Like, Gotham City should just be filled with all of these great, like, rogues and, like, soon-to-be villains and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you can have, like, a Penguin who sort of is, like, a criminal mastermind, mob bossy type that sort of oversees things and doesn't necessarily have to be the main villain. Like, I don't know that I necessarily want to see, like, you know, the main villain where we're going to have our big fight at the end of the movie, you know, like that type of thing.
Right.
I don't necessarily think we need that. I wouldn't mind if the story revolved around him trying to solve some type of mystery where, like, that ultimately is the payoff. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'd love to see, like, a Long Halloween type of thing, basically. You know, where and let things happen sort of around it. But I have no idea where he's going with it. I don't know how that would play to general audiences. I think for marketing purposes, I guess you want to have a couple of villains at least that you could put out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, well, maybe you don't. I mean, I think Batman pretty much sells himself right at this point.
No, 100%.
You just know, like, okay, not the Joker. You know, we're going to have a lot of Joker. And, you know, especially with this Joaquin Phoenix movie coming out.
Right, right.
So let's not, we don't necessarily need to go, not to say they should never do it, but definitely not in the first movie. Maybe not even in the second movie. I don't know that we necessarily need that. But I don't know. You know, I don't know if, so, you know, depending on where they set this, like if Harvey Dent is still just Harvey Dent, district attorney, that's one thing. If he's already Two-Face, that's always an intriguing villain. Because we didn't really get, so we, as far as I'm concerned, we never got Two-Face in Batman Forever. Because Tommy Lee Jones and Joel Schumacher clearly had no idea, had never even read the character. They just assumed that he was like the Joker, I guess.
Yeah, raisin face.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was great in The Dark Knight, the Aaron Eckhart take on it, but, like, he was Two-Face for such a short period of time in that movie, and clearly wasn't the main villain in that movie.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's room to tell that story or a version of it. It's such a great story. But again, that wouldn't necessarily happen. If Harvey Dent is going to be Harvey Dent at the start of this trilogy, then you would build to that. If he's not, if he's already Two-Face, which probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the whole power of that character comes from the relationship between Harvey Dent and Bruce Wayne.
Right.
But if he is already Two-Face for whatever reason, then there's a nice direction to go. So there's a lot of psychological stuff you could go with. I'm going to assume that Clayface isn't going to be the villain. That's a great character, too, that I think could be done really well. But clearly that's not the direction I don't think that he's going in. I think this will be a smaller, more, I hate to use the word grounded, but it's going to be, I still think this is going to be like a smaller kind of detective story, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think they can go Deathstroke, even though, you know,
I don't know that fits.
He was rumored at one point. I mean, I can understand the, you know, the Penguin Cobblepot role and the Catwoman intrigue. I really want to see Hush.
I think Hush would again, be, that's something you have to build to, though.
Right. Because you gotta. I don't think a lot of people. Well, I say that, but Hush just had a really good run. So, but for the average viewer, right, for the general audience, a lot of people, I don't think they really know who Hush is.
No, and that's a story that really the payoffs in that it helps if you've been a fan and you follow the character and you know the history of the character, because there's a lot of stuff that pays off in Hush and the build to Hush and finding out, you know, who Hush is and whatnot, that I don't know. I mean, not to say you couldn't do a version of that, though. You know, like take the concept, because it's a great concept, and, you know, and maybe twist it a little bit so that it's not as kind of continuity heavy, or not as, it doesn't rely so much on knowledge of past events. But even with that, though, like, you know, that's something that I think still you would want to build. But that's an interesting concept, though, that they could use, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. So, I mean, dude, we can do a whole episode.
Oh,
on this.
Yeah. I mean, we can, and we have at times, but, and we may again in the future. But yeah, I mean, I'm just excited. Now that we have at least the main cast, character cast, I'd be really curious. I'm pumped to see the rest of the casting. I'm assuming casting announcements are going to start to fly now pretty soon because, you know, you got your big gun. So the rest should just be falling into place, and that'll get me really excited. You know, you're going to want to know who Alfred is. You're going to want to know who, you know, who the villains are and then who's going to play them.
Right.
You know, and you know, who else they're going to... I think that the scope of the cast, I think, will also tell you a little bit about the direction that they're going. Like, you know, Nolan took his cues from Richard Donner casting-wise when he was starting his trilogy.
Sure.
And he, you know, has said a number of times that he, you know, he loved how Donner took, like, A-list actors or great character actors and put them in, like, smaller roles, right? So, like, Ned Beatty, you know?
Right.
And, you know, obviously he had, you know, Glenn Ford, you know, people like that that were just, you know, he populated his movie with really good actors, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And that's what Nolan used as his template for casting Batman Begins.
And it's brilliant.
It's fantastic. Really. I mean, it's really kind of staggering the amount of people that are in those movies. And so, you know, if they go like something like that, that'll tell you one thing. If they're going to start to cast, you know, maybe younger actors who are talented but lesser known, then, you know, maybe that tells you they are kind of going in a slightly different direction and going to build their own thing. So, yeah, I'd be really curious to see the direction that they go in with the casting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
And then, of course, we're going to start to get all the fun. We want to know what the suit's going to look like. And
right.
The Batmobile,
yeah, which will take some time.
Yeah, what Gotham City is going to look like. Are they going to go with the Nolan, like, realistic look? Or are they going to... I wouldn't expect them to do the Tim Burton, you know, gothic look. But is it going to be sort of a hybrid, which would be kind of a wet dream for me?
I mean, we kind of got that, though. Didn't we, like... In bits and pieces of BVS.
Well, you did, and I mean, but that
you know,
was...
It's like the smoky filled.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Gotham City should be smoky filled at points, no doubt.
Yeah. Like, I actually feel we got more of that Gotham City vibe in Justice League than we really did in...
Yes.
In BVS.
Yeah. I would love to see like a seedy Gotham. You know, like, especially if it's in the earlier years of Batman. You know,
like a 1986 Times Square type
Yeah, like, look. To me, and, like, again, I said this before, like, my favorite Batman stories are, like, Batman Year One and The Long Halloween and stuff like that. And to me, Gotham City in those books, like, for me, like, it just looks seedy. And, like, it's almost like you can hear, like, the saxophone score playing in the background. Like, we're just reading
it's like,
the books,
like the Arkham,
you know?
Arkham City.
Yeah, like, I mean, those are more like, yeah, I mean, they're seedy, but they're really, those are kind of like dystopian almost. I don't know that we need to go that far with it, but yeah, I'd like it to be seedy. I'd like it to be like, 80s, like Times Square, you know, and just kind of Yeah, that would be my ideal. But with a little bit of the kind of the gothic touch that Burton had, and you know, the mix of the more realistic, like, yeah, I mean, I liked what they did. You know, we didn't get to see a lot of it because, again, it wasn't his story, but in, you know, with in the Snyder films, I liked where they were going with Gotham. But yeah, that would be my preference, because Gotham City is a character in the best Batman stories, and it should be. And so that's something that's always important to me. It's like, what's Gotham going to look like this time?
Right. I mean, we didn't really get much of the seedy look in the Nolan films.
No, he went for a realistic.
Slight touches with it, though, when he goes to the Narrows.
Sure. Yeah, because that's
right. Where you start to get a little bit of that.
Yeah. And that's, again, know. That's more of that, like, you know, we gave up on this part of town sort of deal. But, yeah, he wanted it to look like Chicago. You know, he wanted it to look like a town that people would live in and exist in, which I get. That's the direction that he was going. Nothing wrong with it. Again, it fit the story he was telling, but visually it just wasn't anything specific. Right. You know, it wasn't anything that jumps out at you. You know, whereas I think about the opening of Batman 89.
Oh, you know, oh,
it's
God,
just like,
yeah.
Just that whole thing. It's just visually, it's just amazing. Again, right. It looks at times very much like a set. More so in Batman Returns. There are times where it clearly looks like they're walking around on a set.
You know what bothers me the most about stuff like that is snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Snow that is a lot of snow clearly just like Returns. Foam.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're like, oh, we just put a whole bunch of soap in this, like, bucket.
Yeah.
And it's not really, like, it just doesn't move. That always bothered me in Batman Returns.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It just looks, yeah.
Yeah, it just looks silly.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a cardboard sidewalk. All right, well.
And, of course, cool. The score, right?
That, yes.
Because there's one thing that they've had some iconic scores.
Not lately.
No, well, I'm not talking. I'm talking in Batman movies.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
no.
But I'm just curious to see who they get to, who the composer is going to be. That'll tell us a lot, too.
I think, anyway. Well, yeah. So here's the thing. So Rupert, what's his last name? He's blanking on me. The guy who scored
Wonder Woman and Aquaman.
Wonder Woman and Aquaman. Yeah. Yeah. Just
Rupert
scratch.
Gregson Williams or something like that.
Scratch. Yeah. Yeah. Scratch.
Well, him. I don't think he's got. I mean, I'm assuming Matt. Well, actually, Matt Reeves used Michael Giacchino, I believe, in War for the Planet of the Apes. And I loved his score in that. That was my favorite score of that year. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's the direction that he goes. It's a guy he's worked with before.
Right,
It's a guy who's that whole J.J. Abrams connection. You know, he did the Star Trek films for Abrams, and Reeves is an Abrams guy. So, yeah, I mean, that would maybe make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that dude's everywhere.
Yep. Now he is, especially.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
Well,
he
that's what happens, so many, you know, like, when you get a hot composer like that who puts together some, you know, they tend to, you know, they get work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm to your point, I'm interested to see who they bring in.
Yeah.
On the score side of things. So
we're gonna be talking plenty of Batman here. Probably for the next year plus. So as we start to get more details, though, because there's only so much, I mean, we can speculate.
I know.
Forever,
I mean, we can speculate till we.
But there's only so
face.
Much we can do. So as we start to get more information that trickles in, then we could keep revisiting things and adding layers to this whole thing. But we're definitely, you know,
yeah,
we're gonna be locked in on Batman.
And to all of you listeners out there, definitely let us know what you guys think. What kind of suit do you guys want to see? What kind of villains do you guys want to see?
Yeah.
Tweet at us.
Composers.
And, composers, stuff
we
like that.
Hear...
Maybe Davo will finally get his soundtrack/score episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Jab.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah. I know we had a couple of other items.
We do, but I wanted to actually talk because we've been talking about the box office last few weeks, right? Because there's things going on. So this week was
a crazy summer, man.
It has been. And one thing to start, so Avengers Endgame, which now stands at $2,715,000,000, does not look like it's going to catch Avatar now. It's about $70 million behind. And, you know, it's winding down now. Like, it's at the point where it's doing, like, $15 million worldwide every week, you know, in the weeks now, and ticking down. So it might be tough. I don't think it's going to get there.
Yeah.
Not that that's a disappointment. I mean, just it still made a fortune, but I'm just saying it was the hope, my hope anyway, that it would catch it. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
I don't know about that. I mean, I imagine, you know, Disney may want to take that, you know, that trophy and could pour some, you know, a little additional and give it an additional push to get it over there.
Sure.
And
that would be cheap,
I don't,
though.
I mean, for the past couple of weeks, I've been talking about the residual impact that Homecoming might have on Endgame. I don't, you know, just kind of looking at the landscape, I don't necessarily know that it's going to get that much of a bump. But we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. But I know a lot of people are saying it really is highly unlikely that it'll beat Avatar.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I kind of, you know, I was hoping it would.
Yeah.
Not because it's a Marvel versus Avatar thing. So we'll stop that conversation before it even starts. It's just because, you know, it's always fun to see some competition.
Yeah. And another movie that will not be beating Avatar is Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Wow, what happened with that
movie?
Well,
so now we had talked about it before, right? It was projected to do between 40 and 50 million, right? As far as the initial projections. And it did 47 million. But now here's the interesting thing. So I was supposed to go see it this past week and just decided not to. For a couple of reasons, but it just... This is just not a movie. And I saw the reviews, and reviews aren't something that usually sway me, especially with this type of a movie. But I just got less and less excited about this thing as, like, the week went on. And as the weekend got here, I was, you know, like, you know what? I don't even feel like going. Mm. I mean, I'll eventually watch it because I do love Godzilla and I love the character. But, yeah, I wound up skipping it this weekend, and I wasn't the only one. Now, you know, the movie... The Godzilla 2014, the first in this whole series, did like over 90 million in its opening weekend, and then it tailed off drastically. So this movie probably suffered from the fact that, like me, not a lot of people were crazy about that first Godzilla, especially upon multiple viewings. There's much more goodwill about Kong Skull Island than there is about Godzilla 2014. I don't even hear people talking about that movie anymore, but I get people, I don't want to say regularly because that's an overstatement, but I just had someone the other day even tell me how much they enjoyed Kong Skull Island, like how more than they thought, right? That's what everybody says. Like, I had no expectations for that movie and I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect to like it at all. Mm-hmm. I hear that pretty frequently from people, but I don't really hear people talking much about Godzilla 2014. And, yeah, and you know what's funny? It doesn't look like it's going to have great legs either, because at the Monday box office came out and Aladdin had already taken over first place again for Monday.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so Godzilla dropped to 2 already for Monday. So yeah, it doesn't look like, and you know, the budget was like $170 million, so, and it's at like 170 worldwide right now, or 180 worldwide, whatever, and I don't know. This one does not look like it's going to be a very huge hit.
Did they throw more money at that one than the first?
I would think they would have had to, right? Because of all the...
Yeah, all the other CGI and stuff like that.
I can tell you right now. So the budget for this movie is reported $1.7 million. And let's see what the budget for Godzilla 2014 was. I can't imagine that it was... it was just about the same. 100 reported anyway, 160 million. So 10 million less.
Mm.
But that movie did, because again, it tailed off big time and did not do big numbers overseas. So it only did $529 million worldwide after like a $93 million opening weekend in the U.S. So this movie is going to struggle. It should do better overseas, I would think, a little bit better anyway than the 2014 movie. And it did well in China. It did $70 million in China opening weekend. But, yeah, I don't know. This one's going to be a struggle, and it's going to be interesting because, you know, they're building up this MonsterVerse thing and to Kong versus Godzilla versus Kong, and maybe that the name value of that will draw people in, but I don't know. Not excited about it.
That's wild.
Yeah. But now what do you think about...
I would have thought it would have made more money. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Like, people are all over that kaiju stuff.
Well, and I think what happened... Well, but are they, though? Because if... Let's look at the history of that, because, like, the Pacific Rim movies didn't do numbers. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, Godzilla 2014, after a huge opening weekend, fell off a cliff. And Kong Skull Island, you know, was not a huge hit either. So are they? Are we really kaiju crazy anymore? Or is it a niche? Now, interesting, though, the demographic breakdown of that box office for Godzilla. Talk about a target audience. I read it was like 65% of the audience or 67% of the audience was male. And like more than half of the audience, something like that, was over the age of 35. It was crazy demographic breakdown. So, yeah, so like clearly an entire generation does not care at all about kaiju. That's a very much an us generation thing. Our generation that grew up watching those Godzilla movies on, you know, Thanksgiving on Channel 9, or at least in New York anyway.
Right.
You know, like that was part of our generation, and we have a nostalgia for it that clearly does not transcend. So I don't know. I don't know if people really love that stuff anymore. I think there's cooler things out now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where do you think, looking forward a little bit towards the box office, Dark Phoenix opens this coming weekend?
Oh, God.
And the projections on it are somewhere in the same ballpark as what the projections were for Godzilla. Although it's going to be interesting. I am not pumped for this movie. I will see it just because I've been.
Oh, you will.
I will. And because I've been a fan of this franchise, warts and all. It's just been such a fascinating franchise. I mean, the highs have been really high and the lows have been really low, right? There hasn't been a lot of middle ground in this franchise. But I've been a fan and I hated X-Men Apocalypse, hated it. But I really love First Class, and I really love Days of Future Past, and I kind of would like to see, you know, I mean, to me, James McAvoy is still great, Michael Fassbender is still great. Like, I would love to see this group go out on a high. I would, and I'd love to finally see a great take on the Dark Phoenix saga on film. That would be great. I want this movie to be great. I don't want it to suck at all. I don't really ever want a movie to suck, and still don't get that whole idea, but I want this movie to be great, and I'm curious, if the reviews on this happen to be strong, do you think it overperforms? Are reviews a factor at this point? Like, do you think that part of the Godzilla, you know, box office this week has the fact that the reviews weren't great? You know, that's part of it? Or do you think that matters now? So for a movie like this, it doesn't have a lot of hype, doesn't have a lot of build, people aren't really sure what to do with it. Reviews bump it?
Yeah, I would say for the fanboys, no. You know, like you said, you're still going to see it, right? For general audiences that actually need to make a choice.
Yeah.
If
they're reading reviews anyway.
If they're reading reviews, yeah, I mean, that might be the deciding factor. But then, you know, to that end, probably not. You know, I think it depends on the mood. It also depends on, you know, maybe how frequently folks have been going to the movies. It's just like right now, as I was thinking about it, it's a super saturated summer. every weekend there seems to be some sort of new blockbuster film that's kind of coming out, and they're getting these like quick spikes and then these tremendous drops. It's the ones that have like the, I guess the family type films, like I don't know if Avengers is a family film, but it was a cultural moment that people wanted to see.
Right. Yeah.
But like Aladdin, for example.
Right. Yep.
You know, that did tremendously. It performed tremendously over its projections.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know. I think if I were a guessing person, I think Dark Phoenix hits at or around where the projections are. I don't think it's going to be an overperforming film.
You're right.
And I think the reviews may impact its success in the weeks out, you know, in the second week or so. And the thing is, too, it drops this weekend, right?
Yeah, it does.
Aren't the reviews embargoed until, like...
They are very embargoed. This is, like, a classic embargo. Like, they're not supposed to come out till like, the last minute, basically. Which normally never bodes well. It never bodes well, but, you know, sometimes it's... You know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Sometimes the studio maybe doesn't have confidence in something, but maybe they should. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know. It's interesting how that happens. I'm kind of fascinated to see, like, I don't usually care much about reviews these days, but, like, this, because of the embargo being what it is, like, I'm actually kind of fascinated to see how that works out. Like, will it kind of bite them, you know, in the butt a little bit if the reviews wind up being really strong? Although, again, does it really matter at this point? Because I think the only people that are looking at those really early reviews and word of mouth are people like us, mm-hmm. who kind of maybe we've already decided whether we are or aren't going to see it. I will say, not that this is, I'm not going to become any, you know, type of box office forecaster based on this, but interestingly enough, the day and time that I was supposed to go see Godzilla last weekend, that's the exact day and time that I'm going to hopefully be seeing Dark Phoenix. And the theater basically only had a couple of extra seats sold on the same exact day that I looked at the Godzilla tickets. So, like, there was no tickets sold when I went to go buy the Godzilla tickets, and there were like two tickets sold for that same thing. Not that that means anything, but it's very possible based on hype that it will do numbers similar to what Godzilla did in that high 40s, low 50s range. Which may be fine, actually.
And, you know, the thing is, too, we're sitting here going, oh, you know, we can't wait for, like, the MCU version of the X-Men. But again, I don't think anybody, or I don't want to say anybody, like most of the general audience even has an inkling about any of those inside, you know. Right. And so I don't even think that's a factor for most people. Yeah. I just think, I think if you've been following this franchise and you're vaguely familiar, this is going to look like something you've already seen. I think that Apocalypse does this movie no justice, regardless of how good it is. Correct. And we've talked about this. It's because I don't, and most audiences, for that matter, give a damn about those characters that are prominently featured in this film.
Yeah, so they're really going to have to make me care in this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're spending a lot of time making Jean Grey your villain, whatever, in the story, but they've done nothing to set her up in Apocalypse. So why do I want to see her? Jessica Chastain is an amazing actress. She should carry some weight in this film. But they, in the marketing, she's vaguely around, right? Fassbender and McAvoy, who were the sort of kings of this version of this, you know, in the franchise, from First Class, like, feel like they're supporting characters in this.
Well, the marketing has been weird for this. Like, it's just, it's not great. It hasn't been well, like, overly marketed. A lot of people are still unsure of what this is. Because, again, like, we know what the Dark Phoenix is. We know the Dark Phoenix saga. We've read it in comics. We've seen it in the animated series. We even know that they tried to do it kind of in the, you know, the first, the original trilogy of films, right? Before they just, that went off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
The average movie-going audience doesn't know that stuff. They don't know the significance of Dark Phoenix. They just and I don't even know that they've done a great job of tying this mark from a marketing perspective into the, like, the X-Men universe.
Right. I mean, because it's not even in the logo anymore.
Right.
Or in the,
I mean, there's the X and the O thing, which you're supposed to, you know, I guess pull from. But yeah, like, it's really weird. This is just a weirdly marketed film. And it's funny because what you just said, I was thinking it too. You know, we know that this is it, right? We know that this is it for this version of the X-Men, but most people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you marketing almost like you're defeated? Like, you're marketing this movie almost like you know it's the end, but not everybody does. So why not go out with a bang? I don't know. It's just, it's kind of unfortunate, but. Because it has not been that bad of a franchise. They've actually done really well, and this was one of the first, you know, like, it's a groundbreaking franchise in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no MCU when these movies were made, and this was the, you know, a huge success as far as Marvel characters go on film. You know, really, and it's a shame that it kind of goes out. Like, yeah, and Grant, like I said, those lows are pretty low. Right, your Last Stands and your Origins Wolverine and your Apocalypses, are those are terrible films, but there's some great highs in this franchise. I mean, X2 and Logan and First Class and Days of Future Past, and even, you know, the Wolverine was fine, like the first X-Men was fine. So I guess there is some middle ground. That's, I said before, there hasn't really been middle ground, but to me, like, the first X-Men and the Wolverine, like, those are kind of middle ground. They're good, they're not great films.
Yeah.
But there's some great highs, you know. The lows are not as much as people think, anyway.
No,
at least unless you have a different opinion of some of the other films than I do. But, like, you know, yes, Apocalypse, Origins Wolverine, and The Last Stand, terrible.
Origins Wolverine is just
a
dumpster fire.
Yes,
so bad.
Yeah.
I commented about this, I think, today on Twitter, that the video game that the movie was based on was way better. It had a better story than the movie.
It did. Yeah,
and. It was a movie I wanted to love so bad, and I remember walking out of that theater being so disappointed, and just saying, like, this just killed the entire franchise, because at the time they were fast tracking. They were going to go do the origin films, and they were fast tracking the Wolverine, and they were fast tracking Magneto.
Yeah,
and eventually Magneto did morph into First Class, and what we got was a tremendous film, one that is certainly focused on the character of Eric Lynch and Magneto. And that's just a great film.
Yeah,
and. There's a lot of stuff that happened, a lot of nuances that happened in that movie that just kind of changed the game, so to speak. I mean, it opened the door again for movies like Logan and Days of Future Past. And again, I think they just totally jumped the shark on Apocalypse.
It's weird. It's just a mess. But yeah.
Oh God.
But you know, we got Logan though after that, and
yeah,
thank God.
Yeah,
because that's such a
film, it was just like a whoa. Okay, so you guys can really make some amazing films, and so, you know.
And Logan was a fitting goodbye to that character and that era. So hopefully, this becomes a fitting goodbye to this group of. Well, at least the couple that we've gotten to really like.
Well, so, like, that's the thing, too. Like, Logan got an amazing, you know, cowboy riding off into the sunset type ending, right? But the characters that I think people have been following for so long did not get that kind of send-off.
Of course, because it was his movie. And, I mean, Professor X has but, you know.
But granted, I mean... We've done here's X, you know, X-Men X2 Last Stand, And now you've got First Class, Days of Future Past, and Dark Phoenix. And think about the characters that we spend our time with in First Class and Days of Future Past. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the Magneto,
right.
the Professor X, and Mystique.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Everything else is crap. Like, okay, that was harsh. Quicksilver is okay. But everything else is just like peripheral.
Yeah.
And now the peripheral is the central focus of the story. I don't know if that's going
to
work.
Well, I mean, again, they're going to have to make you care from the beginning of the movie, which they very well could, you know, but they're going to have to, they're not, this isn't earned. Like, I'm not walking into this. And they haven't earned my emotion. Like, they're going to need to win me over throughout the course of the movie, which I hope they do, which is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I'm kind of, in that sense, I'm actually kind of looking forward to it because I want to see, you know, where I go with this. Like, can it take me for a ride?
Friday?
No, probably Sunday.
All right.
If I do go, but.
That's right. Yeah. Better text me.
Yeah.
Give me the thumbs up or the thumbs down.
So we'll see.
Or the emoji with the vomit coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't want to perpetuate anything. Like, this is going to be a great movie for those that are into it. So check it out.
Well, yeah. And I'm hoping that I'm going to have a really, I'm hoping to like it. Like I said, I want to like this movie.
The only way I'll go see it is if it's like raining and I'm bored.
Well, or if I text you and I'm like, dude, you got to
see
it.
Yeah, if you're like, dude, you got to see it, then I'm like, fuck.
Which I hope that happens.
Yeah. I'll be like, I got to go.
Yep.
I'll be back in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Anyways, talking about things that that we've seen.
Yes.
Have seen the first episode of Swamp Thing,
yeah,
which
I
totally forgot about.
We're going to transition over to the world of streaming television now. I saw that trailer, which we talked about on the last show, and we were both kind of excited about it. I watched the first episode, and I really liked it.
No spoilers. Cause
no, I'm not going to get into details at all. I'm just going to say,
recorded.
Yeah,
I started watching it.
Okay, I like the feel of it. I like the tone. I like that it's a horror story, essentially. You know, clearly it's a first episode pilot, so you're getting to know things and. But I think this has the potential to be a really good show. And I am excited for episode 2. I'm kind of wish that I could binge it. But I'm excited for episode 2. I think this one's a winner so far. It's one episode in, but I just like a lot of what I saw on this show.
I'm digging what I saw. I saw maybe the first 15 minutes of it.
Yeah.
It's got the goods. That's for sure. It definitely has the goods. I am intrigued and I will certainly continue watching it.
Yep.
And I gotta say, I did start Doom Patrol. I haven't finished that, but these two. Now, granted, I'm only 15 minutes in on this on Swamp Thing and like 2 or 3 episodes in on Doom Patrol, and I'm really vibing with these.
Yep.
I don't know where things went wrong on with Titans with me. Did you ever finish that?
You know, I didn't, and I need to rewatch it just because, again, the place I was in personally when I was starting to watch that was not ideal. So I would like to rewatch it. Because I didn't get a chance to even finish Doom Patrol, but I was really enjoying Doom Patrol. I saw the first few episodes and really liked them. I just didn't get a chance to finish it for whatever reason. But I will. So I think one of these days I'm going to finish Doom Patrol and rewatch Titans. I just think I'm at the point now where I want to binge things. Because I even did that with Star Trek Discovery this season. Like, the first season, I watched it week to week. Like, you know, it was like a show on... And But this season, I actually started to, and then I stepped back, and I was like, you know what? I would rather binge it. Like, I'm at the point when it comes to these streaming shows, maybe it's just habit, I don't know, but I just kind of want to binge things now. Mm. I don't really necessarily want to do week to week. So, although I will with the Swamp Thing thing, because I'm really interested in that. But I think I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to give Titans another chance. Because yeah. I kind of like some of the things I'm hearing that happened towards the end and that are going to be happening in season two. So that's the other thing. So
yeah, nah, same. Yeah. I gotta get back into it. But yeah. Yep.
So
things to watch another time.
Yeah, and the last thing we'll do. This is all you right now.
Hell yeah.
The Dark Crystal. Go,
dude. Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, first trailer dropped late last week, and it is magnificent. Oh my God. So I grew up watching the Dark Crystal with my dad, and I don't know what it, I mean, it was hella scary for me. But I just have such a loving place for anything related to Jim Henson, like, to be honest with you. But this movie in particular, because I could just feel the importance of what he was trying to do. And I remember watching, you know, the transition from puppet to like live action person who's dressed like the, you know, the puppet kind of do their thing. It's a really, really beautiful film. And I'm just in love with the idea that they are expanding this world. They've got a new story to tell. It's going to be a series on Netflix. I know that the director of the series, Louis Leterrier,
yes, I don't know how to do the,
he's French, right, though?
Yes.
So I don't know what the E-R, the E-I-R, or the I-E-R is.
I would think it's Le Terrier.
Is it? Or Le Tay? I don't know. Didn't take French in high school. I know he's got a spotted track record, but from everything I've seen, the puppetry looks amazing. As good as it did back in the 80s, the designs are exactly what you'd expect from, you know, from it coming from that universe. And, I'm so stoked for it. I said the 5-year-old in my, like, jumped out of my chest, and that's for real. I'm so excited for it. So for those of you guys that like the Dark Crystal, get at me on Twitter. It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Louis Leterrier, this is not his necessarily his. I mean, he's the guy who did the first two Transporter films, which I'm a big fan of. Obviously, the whole Statham thing. He also did
The Incredible Hulk.
Well, he did The Incredible Hulk, but he did a movie called Unleashed, or Jet Li Unleashed.
Oh my God, that's an amazing film.
Yes, it is. So
Danny the Dog.
Yes, exactly. It was Danny. Yeah, that was the original title.
Yeah.
And that's a Luc Besson film. So Louis Leterrier's got a Luc Besson guy, and I'm a fan of Luc Besson. And he also directed, unfortunately...
Oh, that amazing film, Clash of the Titans, right?
Unfortunately, that Clash of the Titans remake, which, you know, okay. And Now You See Me as well, he directed, which actually was not a terrible film.
That's not a bad film at all.
No, it's not. So his track record is not that bad. It's just he doesn't have a lot of things on the resume that make you say, oh, yeah, the Dark Crystal. This is the guy.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. But, you know, hey, listen.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? So I know we talked a little bit about, I mean, we were talking about DC. But Netflix post or whatever, you know, in preparation for, you know, the launch of Disney Plus, the launch of Apple Plus, essentially Apple TV Plus, you know, it's got to change its game a little bit. And I think this is a great example of how it's going to do that.
It could, yeah.
You know, it's really smart. And to me, it's really smart. I mean, you got something like that, but this thing has been in production for a while, you know, for at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought about this a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, there's really nothing noteworthy for me to continue to keep Netflix, you know, keep paying for Netflix, because some of their stuff just doesn't do it for me anymore, you know, their original content.
I find that
so
I go
much.
To Netflix very infrequently now.
Yeah. But stuff like that is going to keep me locked
sure.
in.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's
like
the whole
some
point.
Of the and some of the shows that they do really, really well, like Ozark, for example.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to keep on going to that. I mean, but those are few and far between, like, for me. You know what I'm saying? So, but I'll tell you, if they keep on throwing that kind of stuff out, or if you tell me that there's going to be multiple seasons of this Dark Crystal or something else that's going to play at the nostalgia strings in my heart, like, I'm gonna stay locked and loaded on Netflix. I'll tell you that, because it just looked so good. Now, if it breaks my heart and fails, so long, Netflix.
Oh boy, it's a make or break move here for Anna.
No, I think it's gonna be good. I showed it to my wife. My wife is like not a Dark Crystal fan at all. She's
you
like,
don't say.
I have it on 4K, dude.
Well, that's cool.
Real talk. I've got it on 4K.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to watch it again. I haven't seen The Dark Crystal in a very long time.
Come to the crib.
But I am not.
We'll do some popcorn. You watch that shit.
I am not opposed to puppets. I'm actually was a Farscape fan. I might have to revisit that. I'll revisit it in 4K at your place.
Yeah, we'll do some popcorn.
Yeah.
My daughter, Adi, loves it. She watches it with me.
Sweet.
She gets a little freaked out, though, when the big bugs come out. They look like beetles.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But, dude, I mean, I don't know if, so, I'm totally geeking out. There was a show on Sci-Fi. Now, I was, like, a big fan of Face Off. I don't know if you watch that.
I don't, but I know what it is, yeah.
Yeah. They had one season. It was like Jim Henson's Creature Shop or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was similar to Face Off, but like, you know, puppeteers were creating puppets. And then they would perform and be rated and judged based on their, you know, creativity, the character, how, you know, the build, how it worked, all that stuff. It was an amazing show. And it just like, it showed so much of the creativity and love and you know, honestly, like how hard it is to pull those things off, and to see them kind of going back and doing this. It's not CGI, you know. They're using a lot of the same kind of techniques that Jim Henson used back in, you know, in the early 80s. To bring this thing to life. It's just like, it's such a good callback. It just looks really cool. It's what got me really, really, I mean, you think about, you know, the Return of Yoda and the Last Jedi, the fact that he was a puppet, like, and he kind of looked good. He looked better than the puppet that they used in The Phantom Menace. So I'm excited about a lot of stuff. So
yeah, anyways. Well, I have some time. August 30th is the premiere.
Yeah.
So I got some time.
And you'll definitely
to
be over the house before that, so we can.
Yeah, we'll
pop and watch that shit.
There you go.
Love it. All right. That's all I got on the Dark Crystal.
That's it. Might as well. On that note, we can do some plugs.
Yes.
Go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out the latest episode and check out our episode archive and buy some merch. Send us an email if you're not on the social medias. You can send us an email directly through that website. And of course, we want you to join in on the conversation. You want to talk about the Dark Crystal. You want to talk about wrestling, AEW. You want to talk about Batman and all that fun stuff. Definitely tweet us at the Fanboy Garage. And you can tweet me at RealCLMighty.
And you can tweet me at Starting Sith. Be sure to check out our Instagram page. I will update it again. I say that like every episode is just like not happening. But I will. And I mean, again, thank you for everyone who's been listening, tuning in continuously. If you really do like what you guys have been listening to and you just want to support the show, please do leave us a 5-star review. It goes a long way. Helps to kind of boost our search in SEO. And yeah, we hope to have some more exciting things for you guys in the near term.
Yep.
And so please stay tuned.
One thing to just say is, you know, we haven't actually gone out and asked for questions in a while for the show, but just, you know, feel free to just throw stuff at us, even if
you
don't ask. Just throw whatever at us, and you know, it'll help drive the conversation, not just on Twitter, but also here on the show. So just fire off some questions if you have them. You know, we don't need to ask you for them. You know, we want to hear them. So,
yes. Cool.
All right. So
all right,
that's
let's close the garage. Let's get out.